Open the meeting just after three. Welcome everyone. Welcome to our visitor, Mr. Law. We have apologies from Councillor Sapper. Prior to that, just reminding everyone that the meeting is digitally recorded. Are there any applications for leave of absence for the next meeting in July? We have apologies from Steve Vincent as well, is that correct?
Yeah.
He's not coming back? Yeah. No. Are there any declarations of interest? Response to previous public questions, we had none taken on notice. Moving to public question time, and we don't have any questions coming up. Correct? Okay. Condolences. The flag has been flown at half mast, the passing of Clinton Mitchell Michael. Moving into item 7, confirmation of minutes. 7.1 is the minutes of the ordinary council meeting held on the 27th of May. And can I have a mover and a seconder for the officer's recommendation? Councillor Martin, Councillor Shaw. And the officer's recommendation is that the minutes of that meeting be confirmed. Are there any matters arising? Everyone in favour? 6-0. Thank you. So page 6, item 8, technical services. We have nil items. We move on to the next page, page 7, item 9, planning services. And 9.1 is a subdivision application for a lot 3 on Bremner Road. The officer's recommendations on page 10. And the officer's recommendation is that council resolve to recommend to the Western Australian Planning Commission an application WAPC number 203132 for the subdivision of 87 Bremner Road, which is lot 3 in Beverley, be supported subject to the conditions and advice notes contained in the recommendation. Can I have a mover and a seconder, please? Councillor Brown, Councillor Martin. Are there any questions from council in regard to this application or anything further to add from the Manager of Planning and Development? No? I thought it was all quite self-explanatory. So if there's nothing further for that item, is everyone in favour of endorsing the officer's recommendation? Thank you, 6-0. So on page 14 is the Building and Environmental Health Services, and there are no items under that heading either. Then we move into finance. On page 15, item 11.1 is the monthly financial report with the officer's recommendation on page 16. That recommendation being that the monthly financial report for the month of May 2026 be accepted and material variances noted. Can I have a mover and a seconder for the officer's recommendation? Councillor Lawler, Councillor Maxwell. Are there any questions of council in regard to those items in that financial report? I had one in regard, this is on page 18, and it's referencing the replacement road counter, which was an unbudgeted expense. I can't remember if we've talked about that before. I can't remember if we have or not. Was that because it was damaged or because it was... I was going to ask Steve, but he's not here.
It just needed replacing.
Okay, so it's plant equipment, so obviously it came up requiring replacing before we got to the budgetary process. there any other, any questions, council? Everyone in favour of Nelson's recommendation? 6-0, thank you. Moving into 11.2, accounts paid by authority. That's on page 24, and that officer's recommendation is on page 26. The officer's recommendation is that the list of accounts as presented be received. Can I have a mover and a seconder for the officer's recommendation, please? Councillor Shaw, Councillor Brown. Are there any questions? I think I may have had a couple. Look. I was just had an inquiry about the diesel for the air show. So that was purchased from Dunnings. Were they a sponsor? Well, this is over and above their sponsorship. No idea?
I don't believe they sponsored.
Did they sponsor in the end?
No, they didn't sponsor.
Okay, no, that's it. And my next question is in regard to the fencing for the bowling club. Due to the fire damage, is that from when we had that person that set that fire up just in the block next to it? So is that under insurance?
It's insurance, yeah.
Yeah.
Insurance
claim. Okay.
Which we received that money.
Okay, yeah. So if what sort of excess do we pay when we have those sort of claims?
$1,000.
Yeah, so essentially we only got $1,500 back then.
We actually got 159 something, because they damaged the greens as well.
Oh my goodness me, okay.
So it's pretty extensive.
Wow.
Was that the gentleman with the gas bomb?
Yeah.
Was he left down there? Not sure.
That's
they got locked up.
Wow, it's not that long ago since all those greens were replaced, is it? Gee whiz.
No.
That's pretty sad.
No, that one.
Anyway,
it's come about 4 years to run as a significant insurance claim. And that was that fencing was
part of it. Yeah. Mm. I had no idea there was that much damage done.
I didn't realise it.
Wow.
The greens had been damaged. Mm.
Any other questions? Everyone in favour of the officer's recommendation? 6-0, thank you. Now, item 11.3 on page 35 is rates exemption for non-rateable land. Review this annually. Officer's recommendation is on page 38, and the officer's recommendation is that we endorse the review rates exemption as per that list. I don't believe there's any changes there from what we've had previously.
I think that'd be good.
Can I have a mover and a seconder over the discussion? Councillor Lawler seconded. Councillor Shaw. Is there any questions, comment?
Yes.
Councillor Brown.
Let's start with Telstra. I cannot see they're a public company. Yes, they're involved in government. I don't believe they should be exempt. Also, Water Corporation, they do us no favours. We don't get anything from them. We pay a full amount. I think they should be exempt. The land outside of Beverley that was handed over to the Aboriginal Corporation, they should be exempt. CBH, they should not be exempt. That's pretty much my thoughts on that list. I don't know about my fellow councillors, but I firmly believe that. I think we should reconsider those entities.
So I'll ask management to make comment on that, but in regard to the CDH one, that's legislated that they don't have to pay rates, so that's part of the corporate.
Oh, I see. Okay.
However, they do pay a
extra
amount, which is
it's based on tonnage that goes through.
Oh, well, it definitely is ex gratia now because we don't have tonnage that goes through.
Yes, we do. We go through
in Beverley.
Dale.
Oh, okay.
So, Naff Choppers last year?
Yeah, but only because they bought it from somewhere else, it's not paid down.
Still going through? So, there's nothing we can do about this?
Not CBH.
No.
Well, I think, and like Water Corp, it's a state-owned corporation, I don't believe that's rateable. So all these items listed on here, there's reasoning behind it.
What about Telstra? That's...
I think that might be legacy from when it was, federally owned.
Yeah, but it's not.
Is that a Tasmanian exchange?
Vincent Street.
Vincent Street, is it the telephone exchange?
I thought it would be, yeah.
I thought your name then. At least it back to Telstra.
So the owner is Telstra.
Yeah.
So there'll be some legal mechanism where they would be exempt from rates.
What's the Westra one in Taylor Street? What's that?
At the old siding up there.
CBH in there somewhere, is it?
I don't think so. That's Taylor Street.
Mm-hmm. That's the other
back there, isn't it? Anyway, these haven't changed.
That would be PTA or whatever it is, so it's a state government.
Yeah, so basically, a state government entity is.
Rates exempt.
Their rates exempt. As much as that might grate you.
It does, very much, yes. I'll put it on record.
Interesting comment though about the Telstra one. Did that change?
With all our rural living people, broadacre farmers, people that own land, we all have to pay rates. And I can imagine that land being the frontage, and I would understand that it would be 200 to 400 acres out there. Why are they not paying rates on that?
So that
the Indigenous Land and Sea Corporation.
So there may be comment from management about that, but my understanding is that when the Indigenous organisation purchase that property, they're not required to pay rates, and that's the state government ruling. Am I correct in that regard?
Is that so?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And are they now fully maintaining it, or do we still have to go out there and do their fire breaks for them?
No, that's fully maintained.
Yeah.
They engage a contractor, which is the council staff.
And we get paid full rates, full day rates for doing that?
Oh, no, we don't do it, Councillor Brown. We don't. They get a contractor in.
Okay.
Yeah,
I seem very good understood.
I think council might have had some involvement in the first year of getting it organised, but got reimbursed for whatever went on out there. But since then, they've been managing it themselves.
We were reimbursed.
Sorry, Councillor Brown. I thought it was you talking about last year.
Oh, and beyond. I mean, I've been on for quite a while, and I have a long memory, but I was just. It seems a two-tier system, that's all.
Well, it is unfortunate because prior to that, when the family owned the farm, yes, the Shoal was getting rates, and then that's been taken out of our bank of rates that we've been able to access.
Yes, ma'am.
Which I think is incredibly unfortunate.
Don't know why.
When we still have to provide the same little, if not more, services because there's so much of the burden that's coming on local government. Being pushed in our direction by other levels of government.
This is the reasoning behind my question of these places for the rate banks.
So unfortunately at the moment I don't believe we can do anything about it because it is a question that I've also put there previously as well, probably at the same time as you when we were both on council before.
Yes, ma'am.
Is there any other commentary?
One more.
Councillor Maxwell? Yeah.
What? National Trust of Australia, 367 Bartram Street.
That's the police quarters.
The old police quarters.
So they'd rent them out as a default? Huh?
Yeah, but once again, state legislation.
So people live there, get to use all the Shire services and things that we provide, and they're not contributing through their rent. Normally, people that rent houses contribute to the rent.
Yeah, but
That's crazy.
Well, the property is owned by the National Trust.
Yeah.
So therein lies the...
Do they pay rubbish bin? National Trust pay for the rubbish bins, do they?
I believe they would do, yes.
They'd have to, wouldn't they?
Yeah. It's just normally...
Just the rates.
Just the rates.
And the boots and levies and things like that, they will pay. It's just purely rates.
So I can use the golf club for an instance. We pay for the refuge service, which we get, and the ESL.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to the land rates,
and that has been Chair Council's choice, though, previously over the years.
No, I agree with those because it's a social cohesion part of the community for sporting clubs, and I totally agree with that. It's just that, when it comes to corporate, I'm...
Yes, very. We can't help you out with that one, Councillor Brown, but we can understand your frustration. Are there any other questions in regard to that? Everyone in favour of the Office of Recommendation? 6-0, thank you. Now we move into item 11.4, which is a budget-related item for the 26-27 budget, and it refers to the salaries and wages increase. And the Office's recommendation is in vote. So the Office's recommendation is on page 41. And the Office's recommendation is that the 4.75% salary increase be applied to all Shire staff wages, excluding executive contracted staff, and this be included in the 26-27 budget. Can I have a mover and a seconder? Councillor Brown, seconder Councillor Lawler. Are there any questions of management or any comment further from management in regard to the item? I thought it was very good information that was provided there by the Deputy CEO, Manager of Finance, in regard to the budget impact as to what that increase would be across the board for the Shire. And prior to me actually reading all the work that he'd already done, I'd worked it out myself at about 5.5% of what our rate take is. So there we go. From that increase that the state government has applied to minimum wages of 4.75, and that's what it equates to for our council to support an increase for all of our staff who are not contracted staff. Are there any questions? Any other commentary?
My understanding is the super stays the same, guaranteed.
So super guarantee is 12%.
Yeah,
when your wages go up, that cost increases
as well.
Yeah. So that's where the 5.44% of rates comes through.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just something that we need to keep in our minds when we're talking about rates next month.
Yes.
Because that's just one of the increases that we faced.
Yeah, it's like a double whammy that will be.
Well, Council previously, with what we were maybe suggesting that we might like to aim for the budget increase, which was slightly under that amount, which means that if we agree to that amount, slightly under that amount, just to do the wages alone, we're actually going backwards.
Yes, when they say that they've released it, that's a minimum, state minimum. So we don't have no choice, we do have to follow through with that.
But just explain that for Councillor Brown. So it's the minimum wage has increased 4.75%.
Yes.
Council historically has applied that to everyone's base rate.
Yes.
So the state is talking about a minimum wage rate as per whatever that's set at.
Mm-hmm.
We obviously pay our staff above the minimum wage, and we apply that 4.75% on their whatever their base wage rate is for you. So it's a little bit different. So the state's not telling us to do that. That's what we've based our increases on historically, using that minimum wage rate increase as a guide.
Yes.
So we're not obliged to do that, but we have historically.
Mm-hmm.
I think, yeah. And just considering that the March quarter CPI was 4.6%, so that's what people are living within in that inflationary environment, 4.75%. Probably not too bad.
Yeah, exactly.
but the impact is $194,000 on the budget, which is equivalent to a 5.4% rate increase.
Yeah.
Just based on a wage increase cost.
Yep.
Any other questions, councillors? Is everyone in favour of the officer's recommendation? 6-0. Now we move to item 11.5, the budget fees and charges, which is, commences on page 42 with the officer's recommendation on page 46. The officer's recommendation is that the draft 2026-27 fees and charges schedule be adopted and included in the 26-27 budget. So the schedule was provided for council to review. Can I have a move and a second for the officer's recommendation? So Councillor Mark and Councillor Brown, so that we can open the conversation or questions. Has anyone got any questions or issues they wish to raise?
I understand. Sorry, Councillor Brown, I'll just say, so in general, I've applied a 4.6% increase based on CPI, where that applies generally to just general fees and charges. Wherever we've got a contract or an agreement that stipulates something else, or whatever that stipulation is, that's been applied. And then there's a list there of just some other fees that have been tweaked outside of either of those. They've been increased or some have been removed. For example, the community market's higher for the hall. No longer required, we've removed that. Metal dust supply, we don't have any metal dust to supply, so we've taken that out as well. And then there's just that list on page 42 where the, I guess, tweaks outside of that 4.6% or agreement increases has occurred.
So that'll be thereabouts?
Well, I don't know, we can discuss those individually, or if anyone's got any queries about them, that's, we can tackle like that.
The review and addition of the refuse site tyre disposal charges. I don't disagree with us doing that, but it does create a problem for the district because people are probably going to dump their tyres everywhere, aren't they?
Well, we already have that problem.
People that get charged and do the right thing, they've got a mental pick up tyres all the time, and that's historically the same. Whether we're charging or not. I mean, we've always had tyre charges in the fees and charges.
So we've just added to them for the
last. We've just expanded a little bit because, truck tyres are a bit more than your passenger vehicle tyres and all that kind of thing.
So, tractor tyres and stuff.
And we are, taking them and we are recycling them and there's a cost to that. So we're trying to recover that cost. And it is that cost, there's no margin or anything on that.
The hangar fees per glider, are we advised how many gliders are out there every year before that's charged?
Yeah, they advise us.
Those numbers are increasing every year as more sheds are going up out there.
Yeah, they're charging the wells. Okay. We rely on the gliding club to tell us what they've got and then we charge them accordingly.
Yeah, okay. In regard to the town hall, I don't disagree with the fees that we're charging, but I just wondered if it would have been easier to have the full complex as a standardised percentage, like, for example, 25% of everything else. So when you put in the main hall, lesser hall and the kitchen, make it 25% less, because currently it's 26.7, so how do we arrive at a random sort of percentage figure? It's just an observation, really. We don't need to change it. I have to say, it's a very cheap amount, isn't it, for all the facilities?
It might start at 25 and over the years, it's been bumped up.
Because the kitchen hasn't changed, not this year anyway, so maybe that's why.
Yeah, I think maybe last year we were charging the kitchen, we added $50 or something like that, so that might have tweaked it.
Mm. Okay. Well, it's just an observation anyway. I'm just trying to get some sort of structure around how those fees worked out. The caravan park the caravan overflow at the recreation ground. So the fee that they're charged per day, which includes the power, do they have access to the showers and toilets for that fee? $36. So we open up the amenities building for them.
Yeah, it's generally like that, relates to tennis Sounds still not true.
Yeah, well, sometimes we do get caravans over.
And caravan crops, and then they get access to the oceans as well.
Yeah. So should we be having a fee in there for unpowered RV or caravans that stay up there? As the caravan park, we have a fee of that for $22 when they're not using power.
Yeah, well, if there is, then we generally just charge them the unpowered fee.
Okay, well, it's just that it wasn't really.
So it's when that, so if a caravan park comes through, we'll determine what and beds, whatever, what they're using, and that's charge them accordingly.
Yeah, so it's negotiated at the time. Yeah, and all those then. Has anyone else got any questions? Nothing here for me. Anything anyone else? Everyone in favour of the officer's recommendation? 6-0, thank you. Now we're moving to the 12 administration. So on 12.1 is a proposed Shirakerley Bushfire Brigade Local Law 2026. With the officer's recommendation being on page 69. Stuff in the officer recommendation. The council gives statewide public notice, which is what we need required to do for the local law. We've got less than 6-week time frame, provide copies of the proposed law for inspection of the Shire, and invite submissions. And note the presiding member gives notice to the meeting of the purpose and effect of the bushfire brigade local law as follows. The purpose is to provide for the establishment of a bushfire brigade for carrying out normal brigade duties, and the effect of this local law is that bushfire brigades will be organised and managed to comply with this local law, and that council will provide copies of the local law in accordance with the Act, what's this, 3.123 section, as soon as the notice is given to the Minister for Local Government and any other person requesting. So can I have a mover and a seconder for the officer's recommendation, please? Councillor Lawler, second Councillor Shaw. Can we have some clarity on why we're actually doing how this has come about again? We had a bit of an issue with what was there before, did we, that needed updating?
Yeah, Representative, if I may. So we became aware that we used a consultant by the name of Francesca Lafante for assisting with this review of the local laws, which I think you can remember went back all the way to 2023, and I think we advertised in 2024 a whole range of local laws. This is what we advertised, including a previous iteration of the Bushfire Brigades local law. And I was then made aware of the fact that the Bushfire Brigades local law draft that we advertised for public comment did not passed the scrutiny of the Stage Joint Standing Committee, which would incur additional costs for us, because I'm still not clear why the process works the way it does. But now that we've advertised all of this, and after advertising this one, I will come back to Council with a new item to say that these are the submissions that we received under advertising, and this is what we recommend to be done to change the local law on the grounds of those submissions, or keep it as is, and then we make the local law. Once council decides that they endorse my recommendation, the local law is then made and then published in the Government Gazette at huge cost. Of course, every single page needs to be published. It then, after that, it only goes to the Joint Standing Committee for scrutiny, which is a bit back to front. And I still don't know, I don't understand why it is like that, but that is what we have to work with. So this is potentially a cost-saving exercise to re-advertise this new version, which we now did pass the scrutiny of the Joint Standing Committee from a different shire that has gotten these through. So that's the reason for re-advertising this. Now, there's a slim possibility, because of the passage of time, that we might need to re-advertise all of these. But I have not determined that at MOGA or the Department of Local Government as yet. Mm-hmm. So I might need to come back to council and re-advertise all of this.
So when you say re-advertise all of this, that's the other local laws that we're...
That's all the other local laws that we have already advertised. If the department is happy for us to, that nothing's changed materially, like with the bushfire brigade local law that we're now re-advertising, if they're happy with that, then I can, the simplest thing is then to bring back to council the responses of submissions received and make the local law and go on. But I think between Steve and me, we'll try and get in contact with someone that can advise us whether we need to re-advertise everything and not only the bushfire brigades locally.
Okay. No worries. So the bushfires local law, so the content of that, is that a template that we need to follow? Because my observation, we have got a very good structure here that works exceptionally well with our fire control officer team and the bushfire control advisory group that we have. I'm not sure that each of the bushfire brigades that we have within the district have set up with, in the way of having captains and like the structure that's talked about here and that the captain overseeing it, etc. So is this a process that we're obliged to follow legally, or can it? It is.
I have consulted with Troy, our CESO, obviously, on this. He's happy with the format, because he will most probably be the implementing agent of all of this. He's made two very small changes, simple changes really, in terms of when an AGM must be held. He suggested that it's September. But at least he is comfortable with the wording and the requirements to be had as determined by the local law.
So my observation is it's a lot of doubling up compared to how effective it works in Bedley currently. So our fire control officer advisory group need to be over this, because things need to be changed if this is how it's supposed to be set up. Councillor Shaw might have more comment on it than what I've got. And just before Councillor Shaw jumps in, I just wanted to make comment that we've got no reference in there to having the Community Emergency Services Manager on board to assist with our bushfire brigade. So should that be included in there as well?
I don't have a clear answer for you, President, because these things are so sensitive in nature that even changing the wording in a paragraph might throw it out at the Joint Standing Committee scrutiny meeting, which is why we stick with what works.
Well, yeah, I can understand that. Go with the due process, and our process works super well for the benefit of our community. Councillor Shaw, have you got any comment?
Yeah, look, just on the structure of it, the brigades do try and hold their meetings in September, October every year. It works a lot easier for the two brigades that have the actual fire trucks and the shed and they run through it. It's also getting numbers for captains, first lieutenants, second lieutenants, and all of this. You know, back in the day, there's a lot more people. It was easier to do that. Now we're battling to get SCOs. So the brigades do try and hold AGMs and try and follow this procedure, but it's a mess of their ability.
I think that's really what this is about. This is just a guide.
Yes.
You know, you try to make it. For any reason that a brigade can't get five or six to a meeting and you can't fill positions, I think that's be dictated in the minutes. That's pretty much done. And in relation to the SESM, the SESM's an employee, so that could mean that, you know, next fire season we don't have a SESM because he's either resigned or whatever. But this local law is a lot easier read compared to the previous ones where it was very dictatorial, and that's why I think this one for us, and I'm pretty sure the SESM can show this to the chief and think things right.
So I'll just pick up on one point here. The duties of the captain, for instance, it says that like they've got an oversight role, and it's supposed to be reporting locally, annually, sorry, to the local government, the office bearers and other information to the Shire, whereas I see that what's happening here, and it works super well, is that the Chief Fire Control Office is doing all that. So there's a whole lot of double up type stuff happening here. This is, looks like it's quite set up for larger organisations like Council Shores.
I think it is, because they treat the captain as like the secretary of the brigade, therefore they, according to that, the captain goes to the VFAC meetings and does all that. In my time, I had to put me down as the captain so I could receive all the mail from defence, otherwise they wouldn't send it to me. They didn't recognise me as the FCO. So we just played the game.
It's just what we're doing.
You know.
Yeah. Okay, well, I guess it's...
But you are right, it's funny. Mm. Yeah.
But, it appears that we're required to follow this, and there is a process, and it does read well, it's easy to read, I'll agree with that. I'm not sure that people are actually aware of what their duties are when they've been elected into those roles. I would like to very, very much compliment, and I've already said it, as to how well it works in Beverley for our bushfire brigade system. We've got a really great team of guys that are involved in doing that, and then the support that they get from within the community, from male and female actually, it works really well in Beverley. It's very good for our community. Anything else, anyone? So everyone in favour of the officer recommendation? Thank you. So item 12.2 is use of the common seal, which is on page 77. With the officer's recommendation on page 78, that council note and endorse the use of the common seal having been attached to the licence agreement for the lease of the childcare area of the Cornerstone building between Fund to Be Kids and Shire of Beverley. Can I have a move and a second, please? Councillor Brown, seconded. Councillor Royal, everyone in favour? Or any comments? Everyone in favour? Thank you. Issues with that one. We go to page 79, so item 12.3, freedom of information statement. And the officer's recommendation on page 80 is that council adopts the updated freedom of information statement and publishes it on the Shire of Beverley website. Can we have a seconder, please? Councillor Martin, Councillor Shaw. Are there any questions? Or any further information from management or from councillors? No? Everyone in favour? Okay, 6-0. Thank you. Now we move to page number 6, do we? Number 6, sorry. Number 6. I think we're going to the part where
we're
kind of closed meeting. Item 13 was the elected members' motions for notice have been given. Well, there was none of those. So now that we move to item 14.1, and that item is there to close the meeting to the public. So the recommendation is that the meeting be closed to the public for council to discuss confidential items. 14.2, being transfer of land for assessment 1374. And item 14.4, payment arrangement assessment on 1533. Is everyone in favour of the officer's recommendation? A mover and a seconder, sorry. Councillor Maxwell, seconded Councillor Martin. Everyone in favour? Thank you, 6-0. Thank you, Mr. Law. We have to ask you to leave us in.
Will there be any items after this?
No. The only thing that will come in after that, when we reopen the meeting, is the outcome of the discussion from each of those items. That will be available in the minutes on the website and also in the verbal recording on the website. So we don't have any other items to discuss.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.